Hi, this is Chuck Banning, sports editor at The Day. We're back for our second installment of March Madness, UConn style. It was a weekend of mixed results for the UConn men and women. The men, as we all know, were eliminated in the first round in a tough loss to Maryland. And the women took care of business Sunday night, with a 102-59 win over High Point. And they will be playing Syracuse on Tuesday in the round of 32. It's a 9 o'clock start on ESPN, and it's going to be at the Alamo Dome again. And that will be the right to go to the Sweet 16, which will begin on Saturday. And as we know, the whole tournament is going to be in the San Antonio area. I want to start kind of with the men because we're going to wrap them up, obviously. Gavin, you know, we talked last week in our first get together. You know, we talked about how Maryland came from a strong conference. They are a very tough defensive minded team. That could create all kinds of problems. And boy, did that play to fruition. Maybe you can just take a minute and kind of recap that game. And then, you know, a little bit down the road, we'll talk a little bit about the season and then going forward.
Yeah, UConn got off to a real tough start and really kind of set the tone early by missing a bunch of they missed two foul shots. Isaiah Whalen missed twice to start the game's first possession. They got a bunch of rebounds, missed like four times. They finally got a three-pointer out of it, but they got a ton of offensive rebounds and couldn't cash in. They had 18 offensive rebounds in the first half. They had 22 overall and ended up only with 11 second chance points. So that killed them. And on top of that, Maryland's defense just really smothered them. I mean, they couldn't get good shots. They fell behind early. They were down by 33-22 a half and just really could never. I think they got maybe within five or six in the second half, but Maryland just would not let them do anything and really took them out. It was a bad matchup up for UConn in a way because Maryland had big guards, 6'6 guards, Ayala and Wiggins. They both really created havoc on UConn's guards. Cole couldn't get much going. James Bouknight, the leading scorer, he was 6 for 16, only he had 15 points, but he had seven, like maybe like 10 minutes into the game, he had seven straight, and then he didn't score much after that. So they just had really trouble scoring. I mean, they shot 32%. That's a season low. It's also, I was reading today that it's the lowest in an NCAA tournament game for UConn since 1964. So it was just really a miserable kind of all-around game. They played decent defense. They only gave up 63 points, but Maryland shot 51%. So it's kind of mixed bag there. They didn't give up a lot of points, but Maryland got shots when they needed it. And they acted like a veteran team. UConn acted like a team that didn't have any tournament experience. So, it was just a really a tough night. And it really shocked them after the game. The players and Coach Hurley was talking about this, is they were shocked about how badly they played. Like they didn't think that they're going to play that badly in that situation. And that really surprised them more than anything.
And conversely, Vicky, you know, the UConn women basically did what they had to do and they took care of business in air opener. You know, I know they didn't start electrifyingly fast, but, you know, they quickly built a double digit lead and, you know, they were, I don't want to say it was cruise control, but they certainly were never threatened. And, I think the biggest concern going in would the freshmen play like freshmen. And obviously they didn't, you know, they played like they have all year with the exception of, you know, Nika Mule, who, you know, suffered an injury. So maybe you can recap that game a little bit, and then maybe you can update us on Mule status for the Syracuse game.
Yeah, Nika, we talked to Chris Daly this afternoon, associate head coach filling in for Gina Auriemma for the first two games. She said that Nika would be questionable for tomorrow. Now, during the Big East tournament, she sprained her other ankle and came back and played the next day. But like Chris said today, every injury is different. But Nika is such a tough kid that if she can physically go tomorrow, if there's a way for her to go, then she's going to be on the floor because she's just a tough kid. But it'll just have to probably be a game time decision. Probably helps that it's a 9 o'clock game. She has a lot of time, you know, tomorrow to ice it or whatever. So the game, I wrote a little bit about this this morning, but they weren't ever really in trouble, but it was, you know, Gino wasn't there, and then Kristen Williams, who starts for them, picked up two quick fouls. Chris took her out, but then she put her back in, and she picked up a third, and then Nika got hurt, so it was like a little, you know, unsettled. And then just Paige Beckers, the freshman, she was named an All-American last week by the Associated Press. She has another gear. I saw it when this year when they played South Carolina, and she had 31 points, all seven of their points in overtime. She kicks it into another gear. Like, okay, this is what needs to be done. Like, during a regular, when things are just starting out, she tries to get everybody involved and passes it and passes up open shots sometimes. But when she needs to get it done, she really just kicks it in. And, Nika Mule is a good friend of hers, and Nika got hurt in the second quarter, and Paige just went, she scored 6 points within a minute of Nika getting hurt, and she just pulls up for shots. Chris Daly said that her shot reminds her of Sue Bird when she pulls up for a jump shot, and she just sort of took over. She finished with 24 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, 4 steals, 2 blocks in her first NCAA tournament game ever. So that was a pretty good. And then 4 other players scored in double figures also, and a fifth had 9. So they really had a well-rounded performance. Aaliyah Edwards, who's another freshman, had 17 points and 12 rebounds. So the freshmen really just settled in. Like Paige said earlier this year, they can't afford to play like freshmen anymore. They can't afford to be freshmen. So they just settled in really well. And High Point takes a lot of 3-pointers, and they just kept firing them up, and not too many went in. So
Gavin, just want to go back to try to put a little perspective on the men's season. They're going to probably remember it, and it's probably not fair for their last two games, where they, struggled with the Creighton game in the Big East semifinals, and then against a very good Maryland team in the NCAA tournament. But they had played some, electrifying basketball the last 3 weeks of the season to get to the point and basically take themselves off the bubble and get in the tournament. So maybe you can just kind of talk about the strides they made and how that will resonate going into next season.
Well, Coach Riley said they had 3 main goals going into the season. One was finishing the top 3 or 4 of the Big East, get back to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 5 years, and really show great improvement from year 2 to year 3 under Coach Hurley. And they met all 3 goals. So that was a good achievement. I mean, it gets lost a little bit in that loss, but I mean, they probably didn't have a deep run in them unless they got some good matchups and favorable matchups in the tournament, or maybe caught a break with somebody losing. So I don't think that loss puts any, makes the season look any worse. I think what it does show is that they still have a ways to go to beat the good teams. They finished 3rd in the Big East this year. They lost to Villanova, the first place team. They lost to Creighton 3 times, the second place team. They lost to St. John's, the fourth place team. So the only really high quality win that they had was against USC, who was in the NCAA, still in the NCAA tournament as of Monday. And that was in early December. So to make that next step, they're going to have to beat these good teams in big spots. And that's where they really struggled to score, struggled to come up with timely stops. And now they're going to be in transition because, they're going to have some changes in the roster. James Bouknight will probably leave. He's projected to be a first round draft choice, a high first round draft choice. Even though he didn't play well in the last two games, two biggest games of the year, I think he was like 10 for 30. It's more about potential with him. A lot of the fans are saying, well, how can he go to the NBA? He's not ready. Well, if somebody's going to draft you high in the first round, you should go. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's about potential. Maybe not necessarily, what he did this year against some of the better teams, but what he's going to do down the road. And then they've got 3 seniors, Whaley, Carlton, and Polly, with the extra year eligibility the NCAA granted this year. I mean, there's a shot they could come back. They'll sit down with Coach Hurley. I wouldn't say, it's hard to say who would come back of that group. Maybe none of them will come back. Junior Brandon Adams was a bench guy, didn't get to play much. He's on track to graduate. And then, so you've got some holes to fill. They got a top 10 recruiting class coming in, a couple guards and a forward. So that's going to help. But they'll probably hit the transfer market. College basketball now has turned into a at the big wire transfer wire, because in the off season, so many people leave their programs to go to other programs. So I'm sure they'll explore some kids in the transfer market here to see who they can bring in. But there are going to definitely be some changes on the roster. They definitely need to upgrade, get some scores. I mean, they struggled to score against the good teams. So they got to find some shooters. So, you know, at least a shooter would really help, because it's hard to count. Even though they got some really good kids coming in, it's hard to count on them to play major roles as freshmen. So there are going to be some changes in this team going forward.
Well, Vicky, that's a perfect segue to you. Gavin just talked about their top 10 recruiting class coming in. UConn has the number one recruit in the country for the second year in a row coming in. I believe that their recruiting class for next year is ranked number two in the country. And then they just already, looking ahead to a year from now, the class of 2022, they just got a commitment from another top five player a couple days ago. Maybe you can fill us in on those soon to be Huskies.
Well, and the thing is that they don't lose anybody. I don't know. I would assume that Avina Westbrook, who is a redshirt junior, she came from Tennessee and she had to sit out a year. And I mean, it wouldn't be unheard of for her. She could leave for the WNBA after this year, but she has more eligibility, and she went through all the trouble of sitting out and having knee surgery and everything. Like, I don't know if she's going to stay or go, but conceivably they could lose nobody and then bring in the number two recruiting class in the country, including the number one player in the country, who is AZ Fudd. She's a good friend of Paige Becker's. She won, I think as a sophomore, she was Naismith National Player of the Year. And then she got hurt last year, and Paige Becker's won it last year. But you've seen what Paige can do, and AZ Fudd is supposed to be a better shooter. They hang out together and like joke around and play horse and stuff, but who's a better shooter? They joke around, but Paige, they played together during the summer USA basketball a lot and stuff like that, and Paige actually recruited her to UConn. She's like, come on, you know what we can do, we know each other's game, come here, we'll be awesome together. So they got the best player in the country last year, they're getting the best player in the country from this year, and then they just signed the number two player in the country in the class of 2022, and they have two top five recruits from the class of 2022. So the rich get richer.
No doubt. And people have said, if you're going to get UConn, this might be the year to do it, because they're still relatively young. But when those new kids arrive, they could have another one of those magical runs of maybe winning three or four in a row. Gavin, before we let you go, you wrote a really kind of a neat postcard from Indianapolis that was on theday.com last night and is on there now, about the differences of covering an NCAA tournament during the pandemic and what Indianapolis and the surrounding towns were like. Just kind of fill the people in listening to this podcast just how unique it was for you.
Well, this was my 20th NCAA tournament I've covered, so it definitely was the strangest one. Basically, there's hardly any atmosphere. I mean, in Indiana, there's three different sites. In the early rounds were played out. UConn played at Purdue, West Lafayette. There was games played in Bloomington. And the majority of the games, especially in all of them now, in the later rounds as of Monday, were played in Indianapolis. And they're limited crowd. So say where UConn played was Mackey Arena. Capacity is like 14,240, something like that. And they were allowed 1,350 fans in. That's it. Most of them were sitting in the upper bowl, upper section, all spread around, with your little groups, two people here, three people there, And so it was nice to hear some crowd, but there's no atmosphere. So I showed up about an hour and a half before the game. Normally you go to an NCAA game and there'd be a buzz outside. There'd be people all, in their gear. They might be chanting their school songs. They might, just going back and forth. There's none of that. There was nobody really around, just a handful of people mingling outside. We had to kind of wait to go through the media entrance. The team buses pulled up And they were really strict about isolating the teams from any contact with anybody. I mean, they were all the teams were in downtown Indianapolis, all staying in the same hotels, all working out at the convention center, all just hanging out in their one area. They got one practice at their NCAA site. So UConn took about an hour, 20 minute drive to Mackey Arena to practice one day. And that was it. The rest was practice in Indianapolis. And when I tried to go in the media entrance, the buses are there and they held me up and said, you can't even go with, you know, till some of the players are off the bus. They decide you want to do, you have to stay back because they don't even want you walking by anybody. So, and then once we got in, we were kind of, there's had a small media workroom where everybody was socially distanced. There's only a small number of reporters there. There's usually 100 people at reporting, and there was probably print media. There's probably maybe 15 to 20 of us. And then we got seat assignments up in a little press area, the tables they had set up above, and we had plexiglass in between us. Then we had to leave right after the game was over and go back down into the mediator because they cleaned the arenas. Now, we were the last game of the day there, but between games, they cleaned the arenas, and after the game, obviously, they cleaned it, and we had to be out of the arena. So very strict, they made sure that you didn't have any interaction with anybody, and they kept everybody separate, very safe. And I think they did a really good job. One team so far as of Monday, VCU had to bow out because of a COVID. So they've done a great job, and the tournament's been great so far. But it was just, there was just no atmosphere. And that's the disappointing part. That's the fun part of the tournament. Seeing everybody really getting into it. Go by a crowded bar and restaurant, everything's packed, the streets, people walking up and down the streets, there's a buzz, and there was no buzz this year. But the games were still terrific. I mean, that's one thing, the tournament still has had terrific games, and they you know, the games still mean the same, but the atmosphere was just really odd.
Vicky, there were a lot of upsets in the men's bracket, you know, with 15 seed. We have a 15 seed, Oral Roberts, that has made it to the Sweet 16. In the first round of the women's tournament, the top seeds went 16-0. But there were some upsets in the second rounds of games going on. Now, just to look ahead to the Syracuse game tomorrow, what is UConn's biggest concern? If there was going to be a hiccup and something that can make them a little bit nervous about tomorrow night, or if you see something early in the game, what in your mind would that be?
Well, for one thing, Syracuse used to be in the Big East with them, and they've played each other so many times that, and not necessarily this team of Syracuse players, because they haven't played in a few years, but one of the things is that Syracuse isn't really afraid of them. I mean, Quentin Helsman, the coach, has faced Geno many times, and he can maybe give them a little bit of perspective. He said, you know, we get our game plan and we're going to go try to execute it. So they're not afraid, for one thing. Although they have never beaten UConn. Quentin has never beaten them, I don't think. But also, Syracuse has a 6'7" center named Camilla Cardoso. And Syracuse blocked 14 shots in their game on Sunday, in their win over South Dakota State. They blocked 14 shots, which was too short of the NCAA tournament single game record. Camilla blocks a lot of shots, I guess, but it's sort of the opposite of UConn's game against High Point. Their tallest starter was 6'1", and UConn scored 62 points in the paint and just dominated them inside. Like, Olivia Nelson Adoto and Aaliyah Edwards just dominated inside High Point. High Point didn't even try to offensive rebound. They just let UConn get every defensive rebound, and then High Point would run down the court to try to get back on defense instead of letting UConn get fast breaks. Like, that was their strategy. And now the opposite. Syracuse is gonna try to rebound with them. Syracuse, Chris Daly said today that in the paint they're gonna have to do a lot of work to either keep Syracuse from getting the ball in the first place inside. Once they get the ball inside, they got to keep them from getting comfortable shots. And then once they get shots, they got to keep them from rebounding. So they really have to, they really are going to have their work cut out. We talked to her this afternoon before they practiced. So she was going to put the practice plan in this afternoon at practice. But Syracuse's height is going to be one of the things.
All right. Well, I think we're about ready to wrap this up. You know, I want to say, first of all, thank you to Gavin. His season's over. He's ready to move on to some other things. But I think readers of the day should really be appreciative of the fact that we've got two veteran journalists who've been following UConn for a long time and have produced some wonderful content, you know, not only through the years, but particularly over the last 2 weeks in the postseason. You can see all of it on theday.com. You could also go on theday.com and sign up for a newsletter called Husky Headquarters. It's we've done exclusively that kind of rehashing everything that we've done throughout the last 2 weeks. We'll continue to do that through the NCAA tournament. And for sure, you should follow them both on Twitter. Gavin is at Gavin Keefe, and Vicky is at Vicky at the Day. We appreciate a few minutes from both of you. I know it's been a busy time. Gavin, you're going to get lucky and get to unwind a little bit. Vicky, we're still going to keep you hard at work. In fact, we plan to do this again at another time during the tournament, assuming that they get by Syracuse. And keep moving along. So thank you, both of you. You know, I hope our readers, you know, can check out all our content online and in print. Thanks again.